Orioles get shut out 2-0. They're in Fenway tonight. We'll talk to Matt Weirich about that. Bottom of the hour, Ravens. They were off watching everything else unfold over the weekend, like Pittsburgh's in first place, believe it or not. It's only 1 week. Let's not get into hyperbole. But the Raiders come to town. Ravens, big favorites. Home opener here to talk about that and more. John Harbaugh meets with the media later today. His Monday press conference from the Baltimore Sun. He is Childs Walker. Childs, good morning. What is up?
Good morning, guys. How are things?
Good. Well, better than the Orioles with runners in scoring position on these parts over here. You know what I'm saying? And I can't see out of my right eye, and I still got better vision than some of the Orioles batters. But we don't want to get into all that just yet. Speaking of eyes, and that was an unintentional pun, Kyle Van Noy, what's the status report there? The orbital bone from Thursday.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the report was that he has a cracked orbital bone. I mean, we have not gotten a chance to ask John Harbaugh about that. We will get a chance to ask him about that today, see if he confirms that. So we really don't know the outlook. I mean, you would assume that he wouldn't be available this week, but you know, maybe we shouldn't assume that. I mean, I think right now it's a wait and see. I actually didn't think that position was like one of their bigger problems in the opener. I mean, I thought some of those guys actually played really well. I thought Owe played really well. I mean, obviously, Ajabo had the nice pressure. So, I mean, that position I thought actually came through all right. So even if they were without him for a couple of weeks, maybe it's not that big a deal.
Now, one of the talking points Friday, obviously, Childs, and we even had people calling in today about the illegal procedure formation, whatever you want to call it. Ronnie Stanley seemed to be targeted early and often. It was almost to the point, it was like, is this going to be all game long? Where I'd have been watching like Maud reruns because I wasn't going to deal with that. But everything kind of lightened up over the weekend. Was that the litmus test for the rest of the league Thursday night and what not to do? Because I'm not going into their out to get us vibe with that.
It was so weird because watching it live, you felt like, okay, they're going to make this a point of emphasis around the league in week one. Right. And then, as you said, we saw nothing yesterday. It was nowhere. And we obviously didn't see it called on the other side of the field on
Jawan Taylor.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, it was a very odd thing. So, I mean, you do wonder if in some sense it was, you know, hey, look at this, you know, they really were making an example of him, which is kind of what he said after the game. But I don't think it ended up being a huge deal in the game, really, because I mean, three of those calls were on the drive where they ended up the opening drive where they ended up scoring, right? But I mean, it was just so odd. It's one of the odder things I can recall seeing, you know, in terms of a rules interpretation oddity, you know, in the first week. I don't remember something exactly like this where it was one guy in one game.
Childs, you know what the disappointment a little bit in that game was, and he even said he didn't play well. I thought Kyle Hamilton and Roquan didn't play up to the standards of their talent.
No, that's 100% right. I mean that was in a lot of ways the big thing with the defense is their two best players had, you know, about as bad games as you would ever see them have. I mean, you know, I mean Kyle Hamilton wasn't great in coverage.
No, I think missed tackles.
Missed three tackles. I mean, Roquan, I think, missed two tackles. Obviously, they were picking on him in the middle of the field, especially when he was out there with Malik Harrison, I mean, which was, you know, a slower pairing than him and Trenton Simpson. And I mean, the Chiefs really lit them up in the middle of the field all night. It was really not good from their two best defensive players. And that's the number one thing that's going to have to change for, I mean, you could talk about Zach Orr, you could talk about the miscommunication on the Marlin play. But I mean, you know, if those guys aren't, you know, Pro Bowl level, all Pro level players, then, you know, we're having a whole different conversation about that defense.
Now, what did you think of Zach Orr's performance? Just because, you know, the reason I ask is like the play you're talking about with Roquan. I mean, I think that, I think Rice caught like five balls doing it. I was, I'm watching the game. I said, come on, don't put those guys in that situation.
Yeah, no, it felt like they didn't adjust to that as quickly as you would have liked to see. You know, seeing the one big miscommunication on the touchdown that ended up being the decisive touchdown, I mean, you know, you kind of expect to see a few of those in the early weeks. So I guess I wouldn't be too worried about that. I mean, if you remember back to the beginning of McDonald's tenure, you know, they were having all kinds of communication problems in the secondary. you know, with his first few weeks as coordinator. So, I mean, you know, I sort of expected to see a few of those in the early weeks. But, yeah, I mean, if you were going to be worried about something, it would be the slow adjustment on that play that they just got killed with in the Kansas City game. I mean, you know, you listen to the morning shows on Friday, and, you know, people were talking about Xavier Worthy, but you're absolutely right. It was really Rashee Rice, I think, who killed them more consistently over the course mm-hmm. of the evening, and they seemed to have no answer to it.
Now, Charles, you know what I was trying to figure out on Friday was offensively, what's their identity? Because it seemed like, okay, we've got Lamar under center running the I formation and stuff with Henry, and then we have with Hill, we have the spread set. It looks like they're trying to find who they are offensively and what they do well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It wasn't seamless. It did feel like you were watching, you know, at least two different offenses over the course of the evening. You know, we saw the potential of the Derrick Henry Lamar pairing on the first drive, certainly, and you could see that continuing to be very potent, especially if they're playing with a lead. I guess the question is, you know, what is Derrick Henry's role in the offense if they're playing from behind as they were against the Chiefs? Because the answer was obviously we saw him vanish for, you know, decent stretches of the game. And you know, Hill was out there more because he's a more potent pass catcher, and that did work. But yeah, I mean, you did. You felt like you were watching two different teams under the same tent. And you know, can they play that to their advantage over time? I mean, maybe their answer will be that they don't have a single identity, that they can be different teams in different circumstances. And you know, maybe that'll work some weeks. But there is some sense of sort of still figuring it out. And especially the Derrick Henry thing, because he's such a high-profile player. And I didn't think he was bad on Thursday necessarily. And, I mean, some of it is just, you know, I don't know if we're going to talk about the offensive line.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's my next question.
That's such an underlying issue with the whole offense. And I really think it's probably more of an issue with the run blocking even than the pass protection. And to me, that was a big part of why Henry wasn't more productive in the carries that he had. I mean, there were four or five carries where he just had no chance.
Right. And that's kind of the way they blocked all preseason too, those guys, just because they're not physical. They're not a physical group. And they all had their turns offensive line. I thought Ronnie Stanley played a hell of a game. I was pleasantly surprised and happy for Ronnie. Otherwise, there was mishaps by all throughout. And like you said, the run game stuff, they don't sustain blocks very well. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, there's that. And I mean, I do think there's, I mean, to me, there's always going to be limitations with Falele that way because, I mean, he doesn't come off the ball that quickly. You know, I guess the hope is he would be able to make up that with, you know, sheer bulk. But, I mean, he's, to me, has struggled as a run blocker more often than not. I don't know. We said over and over coming in that, you know, there were going to be a lot of growing pains with this offensive line, even if it ends up working out reasonably well. I don't know that we know that it's going to work out reasonably well, but we are definitely seeing the growing pains, and I don't think that that's going to end, you know, next week or the week after. I mean, we're going to be talking about this for a while.
Charles Walker, Baltimore Sun, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Charles, last thing for you. It's got nothing to do with the Ravens in 2024, sure. But how surprised were you, if you were surprised at all, that J.K. Dobbins had himself a day for the Chargers against the Raiders yesterday?
I wasn't that surprised. I mean, you know, first of all, you know that a Greg Roman offense is going to be able to run the ball, right? I mean, that was the one thing we never worried about. So you have that. I mean, J.K. when healthy has always been a very productive player, has always been a very efficient runner, even when he didn't have that sort of fifth gear, breakaway gear. So, I mean, I was happy for him. I mean, look, he's had a lot of terrible luck to start his career. And, you know, there may be people in Baltimore who feel like he burned bridges with some of the things he said at various points. But, you know, nobody deserves that start to a career health-wise. He's a very talented player. So wasn't shocked and was happy for him.
Tell John Harbaugh Nolan McGraw said hello when you talk to him later today.
I'm sure he'll want to hear that.
Yeah, right. All right, thanks, Childs.
All right, thanks, guys.
Childs Walker, Baltimore Sun, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, just tuning into the program. We'll get to it later when we get to the scores and the picks, and Howard Balzer will be joining us. J.K. Dobbins had a big second half
Yes, he did.
For the Chargers.
Hayden Hurst had some, a lot of former Ravens.
No doubt. Hey, Greg Roman calling the plays. The Raiders are in town this Sunday for the home opener. Baltimore Ravens are big favorites in those festivities. We'll get into that as the show rolls on. Whip around next. Then we're going to talk Orioles, Matt Weyrich. Orioles quiet offensively yesterday. Quiet offensively since the All-Star break. Can they get loud again? Because they're going to need to get loud. There's 18 games left. They want that division. They need that division. Can they win that division?
Vinny and Haney's Whip.
Brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Time for the whip around here on this Monday. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato. Nolan McGraw is back. We're going to hear from him coming up in a few minutes. And we'll get to NFL lunch and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. But Dak Prescott got paid hours before kickoff against the Browns, making him the highest paid player in the National Football League, National Football League history, at least for now.
Oh, yeah. Like even Dak said, he says, I was next man up, you know, and there's somebody who's going to beat that. But it was kind of funny. They were in Cleveland, Bob, and he got the highest paid was Watson, and he got a $1 million more than Watson. So to be playing against them was kind of coincidental.
And on the flip side, Ja'Marr Chase did not get an extension done.
No.
Since he were there, had been some chatter that they were moving close to that being finalized.
Yeah. And they must have made progress or something because he played. Or I don't know why he didn't want to get fined. Plus, T. Higgins didn't play. So, I mean, they were kind of up against it. And, you know, Chase really didn't play much during the preseason. And Burrow didn't have a great game. The O-line, what was that?
Is that you?
My fault. Okay. First day back.
Don't worry. You'll get your time to talk there, Nolan McGraw. But so that was happening there. So good luck, or congratulations, rather, to Dak Prescott. But watching the pregame shows, and one of the cool things of being off yesterday, because the Ravens played, was you got to watch a whole day of football. The Tyreek Hill news coming out of Miami, where he and Calais Campbell were both detained by police. Handcuffs were slapped on. According to reports, Tyreek Hill got into a verbal confrontation with the authorities down there in Miami-Dade. Both played in yesterday's Miami win as they came from behind to beat Jacksonville. But, like, right out of the gate, it's like, can we just get through? And I know reality sets in to our little sports fantasy world that we live in. But this was like, really? Like,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I wasn't there. I have no idea what happened other than what everyone else is reading. But it seems as though the police may have gotten a little overly aggressive, and I know a few police officers. I have relatives who are cops. I mean, Ed Norris was a former police commissioner and deputy commissioner of state police. I don't think police officers like to be told to go bleep themselves or get yelled and screamed at.
Yeah, and
I don't know what happened, but we'll see with the ramifications.
There's already been one has been suspended. One officer has been suspended. And Tyreek was saying after, I mean, I kind of give him credit for what he said. He said, listen, I've got state trooper hat. I want to be a cop when I'm done playing football. He said, let's see if we can, make this into a positive.
And I have a platform to, if he was treated unfairly or overly aggressive, then yeah. I mean, shout it as loud as you possibly can. It goes back to Scotty Scheffler.
Yep.
Getting snatched up there at the golf tournament. So, I don't know. Again, I don't know the particulars, but just, real life sets in, man. I mean, they're going to a football game, and before they can even get their helmets on, they're in handcuffs.
Yeah. This is when you need Ed on the show today.
Yeah. When's Ed coming?
October. end of October.
We'll get him on to talk about the World Series. Vinny and Haney.
Hockey season.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. U.S. Open tennis, it's over. As the men's final was yesterday up there in Flushing, I believe it is. And the number one seed, he got his championship.
Thanks for the match, Sinner. 6-3, 6-4, 7-5.
Yannick Sinner is the hard court king, a U.S. Open championship to bracket a massive breakthrough season.
Yeah, two Grand Slam titles for Yannick Sinner, who in March tested positive twice for a banned substance. He was cleared of the positive testing. I don't know why. I'm not a doctor here, but no. I just take my little low-dose aspirin and move on with my life. But three straight sets over Taylor Fritz, who beat Tiafo on Friday night in an all-men's semifinal, and then Jessica Pegula lost in the women's
final. Yeah, so the Americans got to the finals and both lost.
Yeah, but good news is, if we want to look at this as hopefully a momentum swing back to when U.S. tennis was very much top of the world, two women, two men made it to the semifinals.
Yeah.
And that's the first time in a long time that it happened.
Yeah, Jess Pegula's 30. Is there like a young woman on the horizon? I would think and I would hope that some young woman is going to be a stud someday.
We'll talk about this later in the show, but Maryland basketball men, big commitment, four-star forward Marcus Jackson, Baltimore native, now playing high school ball in Arizona, 6'7". He will commit, buddies with Derek Queen. They played on the AAU circuit together. So class of 2025, we'll get a status report, or a scouting report, I should say, from Jeff Ehrman later in the show. Whip around here on this Monday, this day in Orioles history real quick. It is September the 9th, 50 years ago in Milwaukee. Orioles beat the Brewers in 11 innings, 6-5. Tom Murphy's wild pitch scored Bobby Grich. Paul Blair, Don Baylor went deep. Bob Reynolds got the win as the Orioles would march through 28-6. They finished that year to win the American League's Eastern Division Championship. 10 years ago today at Fenway Park, where the Orioles are tonight, by the way. How about Alejandro Diaza? Hit two homers. Jonesy! He goes deep. Chris Tillman gets the win. Zach Britton, 34th save. 4-1 Orioles on their way to the AL East title. And then a year ago today, also at Fenway, slugfest. How about James McCann hitting two homers? Aaron Hicks, Jordan Westberg, Gunnar Henderson also went yard. Nolan, your boy Fuji got the win as the Orioles hold off the Red Sox 13-12 a year ago today. Fenway Park Orioles are there tonight as Cade Povich takes on Brian Bello. Baltimore baseball tonight coming up at 6 o'clock, brought to you by Salvo Auto Parts. Tim Barbalace, longtime voice of the Orioles, Jim Hunter, will get you ready for that matchup. Orioles are a half game out of first as the Yankees lose yesterday to the Cubs. Birds drop 2 out of 3 at home to the Tampa Bay Rays. So a homestand featuring Chicago and Tampa. Orioles go 500. They're 500, man. Sort of like my picks, but we'll get to later on in the show. But speaking of the Orioles, Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun, joining us next. Who's getting healthy? What kind of reinforcements are coming in Brandon Hyde's lineup in the last 18 games of the season? Then a funhouse trip with Nolan. We get reintroduced to him because he was off last week. He's going to tell us every detail when we get to him later in the show. And all their struggles, let's be honest, from the Baltimore Sun, he is Matt Weirich. Let's welcome back Matt. Matt, what is up?
What's up, fellas? How we doing?
We're doing all right, man. 0-7. Runners in scoring position, 1-6. Runners in scoring position. You get the drill. You're around that team all the time, Matt. And you heard Brandon Hyde after the game lamenting their approach, the inability to put together runs. Anthony Santander was even throwing himself under the bus with the way they approach things. You heard the update there, first and second, nobody out, 3 Ks, couldn't even get the ball in play. As you're in that clubhouse, get on the old Dr. Phil suit here. Do you sense a team that's a little bit frustrated with the way they're going about things with the sticks right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think frustrated is definitely the word. 3 months ago today, June 9th, since then, the Orioles are 40-40. That was when they first went 20 games over 500, and they are 20 games over 500 today. And a big part of that is the injuries, don't get me wrong, but the offense, you know, 18 games left. I think that everybody in that clubhouse expected them to have righted the ship by now, and they're still trying to work through the same issues that they were 3 months ago. So, you know, runners in scoring position, you know, lack of getting guys on base, pushing runners around, obviously not having Jordan Westberg, a guy who was really good at that in the lineup right now, is hurting them. But, you know, this is a lineup that we saw earlier this season, we saw last season, is capable of putting up big numbers. And ultimately, you know, guys like Adley Rutschman, guys like Gunnar Henderson are going through some struggles right now. And, you know, Gunnar showing maybe some signs of life here since September has started, but Adley in particular really going through it. So, you know, this is a this is 18 games left. They're running out of time to kind of get things going. And, you know, I think that they're hitting a point in the schedule now where every swing matters, and they're looking to, you know, find solutions ASAP.
And you mentioned Adley, and this has been kind of, Matt, as you know, a two-month thing for him. The home runs, he's only hit three since the start of July. The batting average has been below the Mendoza line on a couple of different occasions. He doesn't walk as much. Are we looking at a guy that might be banged up to some level? Why is Adley Rutschman went from being an all-star level catcher, and deservedly so, the starter in the all-star game, to a guy that some would say shouldn't be starting in a Sunday softball league right now, the way he swings?
Yeah, you know, if Adley's banged up, I mean, he's not letting on anything about it. Obviously, has had some back issues this year, got hit in the hand in late July, but it isn't pointing to anything like that as to what's limiting him right now. I mean, you know, he's getting really under the ball, which has been concerning. A lot of fly balls, not really spreading the field like he has in years past. But really, you know, the lack of power isn't what concerns me. You know, Adley hitting 20 home runs, I think, is something the Orioles would be thrilled about. But really, what you want from his profile is his 350 on-base percentage, and that's not what Orioles are getting right now. They're hitting him at the top of the lineup in front of their run producers, in front of guys like Santander who have been producing this year, and he's not getting on base for him and not moving runners around. So that's, I think, that's the biggest element that they're missing from Adley Rutschman right now. Certainly, this is the biggest slump of his short career to this point, so I don't think there's any reason not to expect him to get back on track at some point, but like we said, with 18 games left, you're running out of time. So the Orioles really need Rutschman to get back to the guy who he was when he was named an all-star for the second time earlier this year.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun, talking Orioles here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, Birds in Boston tonight, taking on the Red Sox, 7:10 first pitch. And we look at Coby Mayo. He's here. The envisioned role for him in the final 18 games is what, as you see it?
You know, I think the Orioles would love to get Coby Mayo hot. I mean, there's no reason, you know, why not to expect him to have a kind of success like we've seen from Jackson Holliday this year, kind of in spurts. But right now, they're not really putting him into an everyday role. Brandon Hyde has said they're picking his spots with him right now. So, you know, yesterday getting Nick Maton in the lineup over him, I think it's pretty clear that they're prioritizing winning that day as opposed to maybe looking a little bit farther down the line and getting the most out of Coby Mayo in the long term. You know, that's kind of the balance that you have to strike as a team that's trying to win every game and make a run at division title. So, you know, I don't know that we're going to see Coby Mayo in an everyday role. Perhaps they give him a little bit of run here down the stretch to see if they can get him hot before the playoffs. I mean, you know, we don't know that Jordan Westberg is 100% guaranteed to make it back for the postseason. So perhaps if you're looking for the highest range of outcomes, the most highest ceiling, you could say, for your outcomes this year, it's Coby Mayo getting hot. So we'll see if they try to put him in that position or if they really try to, you know, on an everyday basis, try to get Nick Maton, Emmanuel Rivera in the lineup because they know what they have in them.
Hey, Matt Hyder said he's tried everything with the batting order and stuff. What would you like to see with the batting order? I mean, Nolan doesn't want Rutschman batting second anymore, you know, because of his struggles. What do you want to see?
I think my number one thing would be let's see what we can get from Cedric Mullins at the top of the lineup. I mean, he's really been one of the best, if not the best hitter over the last 6 weeks with this team. And, you know, with the base stealing ability that he has, that he's shown in years past and he's showing right now, you know, he's a guy who can get on base and move the lineup and, you know, kind of offer a different look from the left side. So, you know, if they can kind of find the balance, I know that we've seen Gunner up at the top of the lineup. We've seen Kowser up at the top of the lineup. It's a lot of lefties in there. So, you know, trying to find somebody to a right-handed bat that you can put in the middle of that has been a challenge. But I think the way that Mullins is hitting right now, you know, he's hitting as well as anyone and maybe probably presents the highest upside as someone at the top of the order who can get on base and score runs.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun. Matt, real quick, of the hurt Orioles, you just mentioned Westberg, who's most likely to return first?
Most likely to return first would probably be Jacob Webb. I think we could probably see him this week, if not early next, and Danny Coulomb probably not far behind. So the bullpen, which has been playing better as of late, is about to get some reinforcements, but Grayson Rodriguez and Jordan Westberg probably a little bit farther behind and, you know, still not 100% certain that we'll see them by the end of the regular season.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun. Matt, appreciate the time as always. Have fun with the Red Sox. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
There's Matt Weirich, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, Nolan McGraw, that's right. It's going to be a glorious return with the Funhouse. His style news from the NASCAR to talk about the first win of his career. Head coach for Mike McDonald. Talk about the other things going on with the Ravens ahead of this Raiders matchup. John Harbaugh is going to meet with the media later today. Buy or sell, where's the money? Count that hopefully at 12:15. Howard Balzer, he's our man, NFL veteran. Covered the NFL for a long, long time. Does it as well as anyone. Get his thoughts on week one. Preview tonight's game, too. Mm-hmm. How about Aaron Rodgers at San Francisco? Talk some NFL with him at 12:30, and then we'll look at our picks for this past weekend. But let's bring in Nolan McGraw. Quick draw, how are you?
Doing good. It's good to be back. Yeah. Good to be back. I'm sorry I missed all the lead up to the NFL season. It's always a fun week, the excitement and everything. And it was just as livid as everyone on Thursday night with that finish. But didn't get to share in the misery
well,
on Friday.
I know you've had a couple of days to reflect, like John Harbaugh will when he meets with the media later on this afternoon, because it didn't seem as though he was in a talkative mood late Thursday night in Kansas City. But the one thing that stood out to you, I mean, I know the offensive line's the easy one to get, and I'm sure we'll probably be talking about that all season long, but anything else out there that you saw Thursday that might have you worried a little bit about the Ravens repeating as division champions?
Probably just the overall sloppiness. I mean, Vinny mentioned it earlier, miscommunication on the defense. I mean, there were some plays that didn't even negatively impact them that should have. I think there was a drop by Pacheco at one point. He had nothing but green grass in front of him. That was a miscommunication. Marlon Humphrey passing off receivers to safeties that aren't even there. Stuff like that. The O-line speaks for itself. And then, you know, coaching, you can say what you want about that. It's a sort of a what if, but, you know, if Likely gets his toe down there, Harbaugh's holding up two fingers. We're going for two. Well, I don't even trust them to get a good play call in. You saw them earlier in the game go for it on 4th and 5 with just an absolutely mind-boggling play call where Nelson Agholor didn't even block. Strange decision. So I hope for everyone's sake that we just see a much more smooth operation this Sunday.
If he was supposed to block, he must have thought he was in man coverage, or the Ravens called that play because they were expecting man coverage, because they were hiding Flowers like down in between the tackle and the tight end. He was scrunched down in there so you couldn't see him, and you really couldn't. And then he goes out in the flat, and the corner's sitting right there because they were playing zone coverage. So something was screwed up there. I mean, if he was supposed to block, he would have had to hold that block for a long time, you know, because the corner was right there. And then are you blocking? And then is it offensive pass interference because you're blocking downfield? That's why I think they were expecting man coverage. And then if it's man coverage, that guy's running with Aguilar, and if that was the case, Zay's still running up the sidelines.
Yeah, that was an animated discussion between Aguilar and Lamar on the sidelines at that time. And you speaking of offensive pass interference, Bateman had one earlier when he was down the field just a little bit. So Nolan's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Are you rusty at all?
I don't think so. Well, I'd like to think
not. Let's go to that funhouse then. Yeah.
Quick draws, funhouse. The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
Well, we'll start here with some optimism. This texter says, watching the entire slate yesterday made me much more comfortable with the Ravens. Offense was nowhere to be found for a lot of teams, especially in the AFC North. I would still pick Baltimore to repeat as division champs.
Well, all offenses will get better because 90% of the people you saw play yesterday didn't play in the preseason. Or if they did play in the preseason, they played a few snaps. So there is always going to be growing pains offensively, at least early on, I think. And especially, you know, for young rookie, for quarterbacks starting their first game, that's really difficult because the speed and defenses are prepping for him. It's not vanilla defenses. I mean, just look at all those rookie quarterbacks. They all struggled.
I think with Cleveland, though, their offensive woes might be real. Chubb still hurt. Njoku, what, high ankle sprain?
High ankle sprain. Their offensive tackles were both out. And then I think the biggest, you know, Billy Callahan, the O-line coach, left, who's one of the best O-line coaches, and their O-line was bad. And, yeah, I think Cleveland offensively is in trouble.
Another one on the Ravens. This texter says, it feels wrong to pigeonhole Isaiah Likely as just a tight end. He really is the big-bodied receiver this team has always wanted. Doesn't matter where he lines up.
Yeah, just as long as it's not on the line of scrimmage where he has to block. I mean, because as a receiver, the best thing that he does, I mean, and he did the exact same thing in college, he's awesome after the catch. He is awesome after the catch. He's got an ability to make yak yards, you know, because he's got really nifty feet and he's got a really strong lower body where he can break arm tackles.
Did you not like what you saw from him blocking on Thursday? I thought he had a couple plays
on
where he
planted it. On the
perimeter, yeah.
He can block.
Sure.
And he did the same thing in college. On the perimeter, he was a good blocker because he punches well. But in line, and I showed Bob a play earlier, like it was the first run play for Henry. And the linebacker just threw Likely right into the play and Likely tackled Henry on the play.
Tackle number 80.
Yeah. Yes. But on the perimeter, yes, he does block well on the perimeter.
Because he had the one where Lamar was, you know, getting out there in space and he was leading the way.
Well, speaking of the O-line and blocking and everything, this just popped in, another mistake. The final play, what the hell's going on? Justice Hill's got to block Chris Jones one-on-one.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just cannot happen with the game on the line there.
And I'm not sure if is Lamar calling the protection or is the center calling the protection, because they turned a protection. And if they turned a protection like that, then the running back has the end man on the line of scrimmage. So whoever's calling the protection, that's a screw up by them.
Mm-hmm. So I give Hill credit.
But you don't want your tight end on him.
No.
Yeah. It looked like Chris Jones was standing next to a guy who was going to sign an autograph for
him. Yeah.
Hello, little guy.
I thought Kevin Hart was blocking.
Can we sign your helmet?
He gave a full effort. I mean, he was scrappy.
Well, and then when Lamar, afterwards, and says, well, I stepped up because I was trying to help out Justice because he was trying to block Chris Jones.
Got to do what you got to do. Some on the Orioles here. Steve in Baltimore says, with Gunnar having way too many errors so far this season, are we sure that he is the sure thing shortstop of the future? Could the infield look different with Gunnar at third, Holiday at short, Westberg at second?
No. Gunnar's the shortstop. He had a rough night Friday, too, defensively, even though the Orioles wound up winning that game. I think he's, to borrow a phrase from Ryan Ripken again, he's domed up a little bit, trying to make the spectacular, not making the easy. Just he's gonna win a Gold Glove at shortstop before his career is over. I would pump the brakes on that. We've talked about it for 2 months. Jackson Holiday, I don't know if he's got the arm strength to play shortstop, especially in the hole. I mean, J.J. Hardy could ramp it up there when he needed to.
Yep.
Same with Cal towards the end of his career. I mean, Gunnar will be fine eventually at short, but just like you, Texter, and everybody else, when Tanner, Bad News Bears, Tanner kicking it around, it gets a little frustrating to watch. But the bat looks like it's coming along.
Although Bordy, the only thing Bordy says was he'd like to have him set his feet to throw a little bit.
Everything's
more.
All a little sidearm, trying to spectacular it up a little bit. And he was, Jose Siri took a 3-run homer away from him Saturday. Brilliant, brilliant play.
One last one from Howard in Baltimore says, it seems like we always revert back to the Bad News Bears, as you mentioned, Bob.
Yes.
Gunnar, O'Hearn, Kowser, Holiday can't tag a runner out. I guess you tip your hat to Tampa Bay center fielder for the robbery on Saturday, but the O's partying a little too much some nights. They seem lethargic when they come out and play every day.
Well, and look, O'Hearn in the play that basically decided Saturday's game, even though they were scored a run, he threw the ball to first like he was throwing a hand grenade. He just wanted it out of his hands as quickly as possible. And I did mention Tanner from the Bad News Bears. Let's not forget, in the movie, they got better. yeah. as the movie went on. They wound up losing to the Yankees in that championship game. But you get the point. I just think they're in a malaise. And we just heard Matt Weirich say they're 40-40 in their last 80 games. I'm looking more when they were 24 games over 500. They're 33-37. Since then, when they blew out the Yankees 17-5, but there's 18 games left. Get it started tonight. Cade Povich on the hill taking on a Boston Red Sox team that just won 2 out of 3 in their most recent series. We'll get to that during the AL East report at 1 o'clock. Coming back, news from the Nats. Talk about the Ravens. Buy or sell, where's the money? Talk NFL Week 1. Howard Balzer preview tonight's game. Aaron Rodgers is back, everybody. Aaron Rodgers is back.